Good day. My name is Lindsay, and I will be your web event specialist today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the web conference for AEP Ohio CBP Auction. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. Please note that today's web conference is being recorded. You can ask text questions throughout the presentation. Locate the Q&A from the floating toolbar at the top of your screen. Select All Panelists in the Send To box. Type in your question and click Send to submit. If you experience any technical difficulties during today's conference, press *0 on your telephone keypad to be connected with an operator. You can also use the chat panel to communicate directly with me. At this time, I would like to turn today's program over to Ben Chi from NERA. Ben, you may begin.
Thank you. I'd like to welcome everyone to today's Visit Information webcast. This webcast is for AEP Ohio's competitive bidding process, or CBP. This is the fourth and final auction under the CBP. Presenting with me today is Dr. Chantal Lacasse, who is also with NERA. NERA is the auction manager, and together with us, also AEP Ohio representatives who will help us or assist us in answering bidder questions to the extent that they require subject matter expertise. I'll start today's webcast on this slide number one with a disclaimer. So any statements that I make here describing or referring to documents and agreements are summaries only and are qualified in their entirety by reference to such governing documents. So the CBP, or competitive bidding process, is a process approved by the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, and the governing documents would include the Commission's decision in the AEP Ohio's second electric security plan, or ESP number 2, as well as the competitive bidding process, or CBP. The case numbers are provided here for you. It is 11346 ELSSO, 11348 ELSSO, and 123254 ELUNC. The governing documents will also include the documents filed in the CBP proceedings, and they include, in particular, the competitive bidding process, bidding rules for the auctions, or what we call the CBP rules. They include the standard contract, known as the Master Energy Supply Agreement, or MESA, the rules and protocols for participation by associated bidders, and the communication protocols. Just take note that throughout this presentation, I'll be using some of these acronyms here. I'll flag some of them here for you so that you can follow along throughout the presentation. So ESP2 stands for the Second Electric Security Plan of AEP Ohio, the CBP for the competitive bidding process, MESA, MESA for the Master Energy Supply Agreement, and PUCO, P-U-C-O, for the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. All of the documents here that I have mentioned, the decisions from the Commission, as well as the documents filed in the CBP proceeding, they are all found on the CBP website. So here on this slide number two, we have a screenshot of the CBP website, and in particular, a screenshot of the register for an application account page of the CBP website. This CBP website is a central source of information for bidders. It's a primary place to look for information regarding the CBP. On the left navigation bar, you see a screenshot here. On the left navigation bar, I will just highlight three sublinks for you. So under Contact Us, we have the first sublink known as the Register link. This is how you register to be on the distribution list so that you can receive email alerts from us regarding the CBP. The second sublink I would like to highlight for you is the Ask a Question link that will link you to a page where you can fill out a form to ask questions. It allows you to ask questions and, importantly, to get responses back from us in writing. And all Q&As that we have processed through this process will be then posted as FAQs on to the website in the FAQ section so that all bidders can have fair and equal access information on the process. The third link that I'll highlight for you is the GET account for application website or request for an application account link that will let you request for an application account because the application process is done online. It's an online process, and the first step is to request for such an application account. If you're a returning bidder that have previously participated in a prior auction under the CBP, you do not need to request for a new account. You can simply continue to use your existing account once the application window opens. So the CBP website is maintained by NERA as the auction manager, and NERA will be the main point of contact for bidders. If you have any questions about this presentation, about the CBP in general, about the auction and how it works, what the requirements are, we ask that you do not direct your questions to the PUCO or AEP Ohio, but to direct it to NERA as the auction manager. This will allow us to ensure that the information that goes out, they are all consistent, they are all from a single point of contact. This will ensure that the CBP rules as approved by PUCO are followed. It will help us do our job as the auction manager to ensure that bidder qualifications are evaluated fairly and equitably. And as the auction manager, we will administer the conduct of the auction and present the results to the commission. Today's agenda has five parts. So the first two items of the agenda, we will walk you through an overview of the process, the products, and then we will turn to talk about the key contract terms. After that, we will take a break to pause for questions and then move to practical aspects of your participation in this auction process. We'll tell you what the requirements are, how you qualify, how you submit bids, and where you find information about this CBP process. Just one housekeeping item here on this slide number five. We will respond to questions as we go along, as practicable as we can, but we will pause to take questions at two deliberate stopping points. The first stopping point is after part two on product design and contracts, and the second stopping point will be at the end of the presentation. To ask questions, you have to do that through the WebEx interface. Just locate the Q&A panel on the right side of your screen, select all panelists in the ask box, type in your question, and click send. And when you do type in your question, we do ask that you include any slide numbers to the extent that they are relevant. We'll start the overview section on this slide here, slide 7 on the regulatory process. So this entire CBP process started way back in March of 2012 when AP Ohio filed its ESP2 plan for standard service offer for its non-shopping customers. The commission issued its opinion and order regarding AP Ohio's ESP2 plan on August of 2012, and on the heels of the ESP2 decision, AAP Ohio filed its plan to establish a competitive bidding process for the procurement of energy to serve its SSO customers. And this is filed on December 21st of 2012. A decision was issued by the Commission on the CBP on November 13 of 2013 with some elements that went into rehearing. And earlier this year, January 22nd of 2014, the PUCO issued its entry on the rehearing regarding the CBP. All of these documents and orders can be found on the CBP website. So over on this slide, just want to highlight for you a couple of things. Perhaps the first and very important point is that the product that is featured in the CBP is an energy-only load-following product. When we say energy-only, what we mean is that this is not full requirements, not full requirements. The second thing is that this is load-following, and more precisely what we mean is that this is going to be a slice of system where you're responsible for a percent of the energy requirements of SSO customers, not a fixed megawatt of energy, but a percent of the SSO customers' energy requirements. Under the CBP, four auctions are scheduled, and here on this slide, we show you in a graphical format both the supply period as well as the percent of the energy requirements that we're procuring through each of these auctions. So the first auction was for a 14-month supply period that starts April of 2014 through May 31st of 2015. It's for a 14-month supply period. We have procured 10% of the energy requirements there. For the second and the third auction, we were procuring for each of these auctions 25% each, meaning 50% total of the energy requirements of SSO customers for a 7-month term starting this coming November through May of next year. And for this particular auction, the November 2014 auction, we're looking to procure 40% of the energy requirements of SSO customers for a 5-month term starting January 2015 through May 2015. We have concluded the last auction. I should clarify, we have concluded our third auction last week. That's September 9th, and the results are provided here for you. In that auction, there were 9 registered bidders, of which we have 5 winning bidders. We ran 20 rounds in that auction. The supply period was for a 7-month term starting November 1st of this year through May of next year. We were looking to procure 25 tranches. We have procured 25 tranches. The range of starting price for the auction was between $60 to $80 per megawatt hour, and we cleared the auction at $48.05 per megawatt hour. This product, again, is an energy-only load-following product, and the commission has accepted the results within 1 day of when the auction closed. A couple of reminders here, in particular for that would be applicable or relevant to bidders who have followed us in the past couple of auctions. So first, there will be no pre-bid, additional pre-bid security that is required besides the standard pre-bid security or the minimum, which is $500,000 per tranche. Those that have followed us in the past auctions may be familiar that in the first auction, we have also required a letter of intent to provide a guarantee and or a letter of reference. And this is not the case for this auction. For this auction, the minimum pre-bid security is all that is required, and again, it is just $500,000 per tranche. For returning bidders, please take note that there is an application process that has been streamlined for you. Your login credentials will be sent to you shortly, and some of the information in your Part 1 form will be pre-populated. However, there will still be some to-dos for you. You will still, as a returning bidder, be required to provide updated financial information and continue to make some certifications through the Part 1 platform. So over on to slide 11 here, this slide addresses the load following aspect of the product. The CBP again is for supply or procuring supply for SSO customers. These are again non-shopping customers, and winning suppliers will provide a slice of system energy-only product under the terms of the NESA. So SSO customers are those customers who take retail generation service from AEP Ohio. And because this is an energy-only product, bidders will have to deliver the energy to the AEP load zone. Supply will be divided into tranches, and a tranche is basically a percent of the energy requirements of SSO customers. And on this slide, as you can see, the bottom we have a table. The auction date is set right now on November 18th. This is for a 5-month delivery period starting January through May of next year. We're looking for a total of 40 tranches, and the tranche size is set at 1%, 1% associated with one tranche. And this is a slice of system meaning that it is not broken up into customer classes. And each auction will feature multiple tranches of a single term. And for this auction, what we mean here is that there will be 40 tranches that we are trying to procure for a single term, and the term is a five-month term, starting January through May of next year. The auction format is a descending clock auction where it will proceed in multiple rounds. In each round, the auction manager will announce a going price and suppliers will state how many tranches you would like to supply at the going price. From one round to the next, the auction will continue and the price will tick down if there is excess supply, meaning there's more bids received than bids needed. As long as that is the case, the price will continue to tick down and the auction will proceed to the next round. The last two bullets on this slide, slide number 12, all we're saying here is that because we know that not all descending clock auction works the same, we're highlighting two elements of the descending clock auction here for you that is being used for the AEP Ohio CBP. First, there will be no sealed bid round, and bidders will provide exit prices as they withdraw tranches throughout the auction. The second is that the auction will establish a single clearing price, and all winning bidders will be paid based on this single clearing price. On this slide 13, we set out for you the key events in this November 2014 auction. I'll begin with the first item, not on the calendar, but on the right side of the slides. There is an alternate guarantee process in place. This will allow bidders who cannot use the standard form of guarantee to submit an alternate guarantee form for consideration and approval. The alternate guarantee must be in use by the bidder in its normal course of business. You can find details of the requirements for approval and consideration in a document that is entitled Alternate Guarantee Process. Please review the alternate guarantee process document posted on our website for the requirements. The deadline is tomorrow, September 19. If you cannot use the standard form and would like to send in an alternate guarantee form for consideration, just take note the deadline again is tomorrow. For the rest of the events, I'll start with the end in mind. The auction starts on November 18. There is going to be a two-part application process in place. Part one is for interested parties to become qualified bidders, and the window for that to submit materials to be a qualified bidder will start September 25th, and it will end at noon on Friday, October 10th. That's the part one date. You'll be notified whether you're a qualified bidder or not by October 16th. That's the part one notification date. Part two window opens on the 17th of October, it ends on November 6th, and you'll be notified of your status on November 12th. The Part 2 process is for qualified bidders to become registered bidders. Once you are notified of your status, there's going to be an opportunity for you to practice bid submission through the auction software, and that is currently scheduled on November 13th. And again, the actual auction will start on November 18th. In terms of announcements, we will announce in the affirmative the tranche target, the tranche size, megawatt measure, as well as the range of starting price on September 29, and we will announce the seasonal factors on October 28. The actual round one price where the auction will take place will be announced on November 13. That's the date of the trial auction. I'll talk very quickly about the application process at a very high level. So as I said earlier, there is a two-part application process. And again, what this is the part one application is for interested parties to become qualified bidders. This will take place for you to submit materials between the window of September 25th to noon on October 10th. That's the part one window. Part two application process is for qualified bidders to submit materials to become registered bidders for the auction. And the part two window runs between October 17 and November 6 at noon. How the process works, basically there's going to be a two two steps in each of these part one and part two application process. You'll hear this term that we'll say later on in the presentation, that this is each of these part one and part two application process is going to be a two submission process. So what it is that first you have to request for an application account. You'll fill out information online. That is the first submission process. You may be required through the first submission process to upload some documents as well to support the information that is there. So based on the information that we receive up to that point in time, we will prepare for you customized signature pages for you then to print, sign, date, and upload. This is what we call the second submission in that process. This is true whether it's the part one application process or the part two application process. There's going to be these two steps in each of the part one and part two processes. Throughout the process, the thing to note is that no hard copies are required. Everything is done online, whether you are filling things up online or uploading supporting documents or returning back a signed signature page, scanned and upload that online. Everything is done online with the exception of the pre-bid security that will be required of you in the part two stage. The pre-bid executed letter of credit or cash must be handed to us in hard copy. Over onto this slide 15, just take note that the auction results are subject to commission approval. On the day the auction closes, the auction manager will submit to the PUCO a confidential report that will summarize the winning bids. The PUCO will then have 2 business days after the auction close to issue its decision. If the commission does not act within this review window, the auction results are deemed accepted. We'd like to flag for you that historically the commission has made its decision within 1 day. If the auction starts and ends on Tuesday, the commission has historically rendered a decision by that Wednesday. So if the commission approves the results of the auction within 3 business days, the bidders must fully execute the contract, the standard contract that is used in this process, and must fulfill the creditworthiness requirements under that contract, the MISA, within 3 business days of the end of the commission review period. And the commission may release the auction clearing price as well as the names of winning bidders from the auction after the auction has concluded. And even if you're an existing supplier, I'll just flag this here for you, even if you're an existing supplier that has signed a MISA in the past, if you were to win tranches in this auction, you'll be required to sign a new MISA. And we'll next move on to part two of this presentation, where we'll flesh out some of the details of the product and the contract terms. I'll start off on this slide, but before I do that, I just want to highlight for you or note for you the fact that the supplier obligations are described in the MISA, the standard contract. And here, all we're doing is to highlight some of the elements of the contract for you. So on this slide 17, as I mentioned a couple of times now, the product is an energy-only product. And here, what we're trying to tell you is that this energy-only product is a load-following product. Product will be a slice of system energy-only product for a fixed percent of the energy requirements of SSO customers. And importantly, because it is not full requirements, it's only an energy-only, AEP Ohio will remain the LSE for its SSO customers. The load of SSO customers will not be transferred to suppliers, and suppliers providing energy supply will be doing so as a wholesale energy sale to AEP Ohio, and this will be done through what they call an internal bilateral transaction accomplished through the PJM in-schedule system. Over on to slide 18, here we flesh out a little bit more of the energy-only aspect of the product. So under the MISA, under the contract, Energy is to be delivered to the AEP load zone, and suppliers will bear all costs that are associated with this responsibility. Because it is not a full requirements product, suppliers will not be providing service which are typically imposed on load-serving entities such as capacity or transmission, ancillary services, or renewable obligations. And because it is a load-following product, we highlight a few items here on this slide 19 that will affect the load-following aspect of the product. So the CBP, again, is for the procurement of the energy requirements of SSO customers. SSO customers are those that have not switched to take service from a competitive retail electric service supplier, what we call a CREST supplier, meaning that they are taking retail generation service from AEP Ohio. And what it includes, it will include special contract customers as well as PIP customers. PIP stands for the percentage of income payment plan. And it will exclude, for clarity, it will exclude replacement energy provided to interruptible service customers during AEP Ohio's requested interruptions. Here, this slide addresses how the load following energy will be scheduled. So under the MISA, suppliers who will provide energy as a wholesale energy transaction through the IBT, the internal bilateral transaction in the in-schedule system. And more precisely, what will happen is that AP Ohio and each supplier will bilaterally establish and confirm a contract in the in-schedule system. The contract will have these five characteristics. So AEP Ohio will be designated as the buyer, the energy supplier as the seller. The schedule confirmation type will be unilateral buyer, such that AEP Ohio will have the unilateral schedule confirmation rights for all schedules between the parties. The sink, as well as the source, will be the delivery point. The pricing will be designated as day ahead, such that settlement of schedules will occur at day-ahead pricing for each hour, and the service type, again, will be designated as internal bilateral transaction, or IBT. You can find more information on this in Section 4 of the MISA. Over on to slide 21 here, this slide addresses how you'll be paid under the MISA and also how settlement volumes will be determined. So there's both a price component and a volume component here. So I'll talk about the price component first. So the price that will be paid is not just the auction clearing price. There will be a single auction clearing price that comes out of the auction, and the price that you'll be paid will be the auction clearing price times the seasonal factor. The seasonal factor will be announced on October 28. In terms of the volume aspect to this, for initial settlement purposes, AEP Ohio will determine the delivery schedule and enter that schedule in the in-schedule system generally each day and generally on the day following delivery using best available PJM data. And in such a way, there will be no need for supplier confirmation. The sum of all the quantities for the entire month is what we will call the estimated monthly energy share. This will be used for initial settlement purposes. All volumes will subsequently be reconciled and trued up to actual data. It will be trued up for estimation, billing, metering, or other errors. And the final trued up data is what we call the final hourly energy share. These are terms in the MISA. You can look at Section 6 of the MISA for more information. Over on to slide 22, I'll just wrap up this contract portion with this slide on credit requirements. This slide lays out what is in the MISA under Section 5 that deals with credit requirements. Let me unpack this for you a little bit. There's going to be two credit requirements, and two separate unsecured credit lines. For each of the credit requirements, AEP will grant to the supplier an unsecured credit line. The credit line is determined based on the tangible net worth and credit rating of either the bidder or the guarantor. If you're relying on a guarantor, you'll only be granted the credit line if you provide an executed guarantee. Any exposure beyond the unsecured credit that is given will be met with either cash or a performance assurance letter of credit. The performance assurance letter of credit, the standard form, as well as the form of guarantee, these are provided as attachment to the MISA. So the first requirement is what we call an ICR, or an independent credit requirement. This is basically an amount that is required on a tranche-by-tranche basis and will decline through the term of the MISA. The credit line associated with this ICR is what is called an ICT, or an independent credit threshold. The second requirement is based on a mark-to-market methodology, and all it does is that it calculates or evaluates the difference between the prevailing market price on the valuation date and the market price in effect on the date the auction has closed. And the unsecured credit line that is associated with this mark-to-market is what we call the credit limit. You can find the details of these, again, in Section 5 of the MISA. And at this time, we will pause to take questions on the first two parts of this webcast.
As a reminder, to submit questions to the presenters, please locate the Q&A panel from the top of your screen. Select all panelists in the send box, type in your question, and select send to submit your question. We will now review questions.
All right. At this point, we're not seeing any questions, so we will move on to the next part of this presentation. I will have Dr. Chantal Acasse tell us how we would be able to participate in this auction process. Dr. Lacasse.
Thank you, Mr. Chi. Good afternoon, everyone. I will be presenting the following portions of the presentation, starting with the application process. Mr. Chi has highlighted in the first part of the presentation some important features of the application process. Firstly, that it's in two parts. So we will be going over in this section the requirements for each part of the application process, and also that it's online, aside from the pre-bid letter of credit, everything else can be submitted online. Now, given it is an online process, the first step is to get an account, and what I'll be talking about right now applies to new bidders only. Returning bidders will be receiving a reminder of their login credentials, as well as instructions that are specific to them, and they will receive that information by email. But for new bidders, to be able to participate in the application process, you first need to register for an account, and there are two ways of doing that. The first one is to use the link on the website, aapohiocbp.com. You will see that at the bottom left, a link to be able to register for an application account. The second way to get an application account is simply to send us an email at aep-cbp@nira.com. Either way, you'll be providing the same information to be able to register, namely the name of the company, full name of a contact, phone, alternate number, as well as email address, and those will all be required fields if you go through the website. Once you have registered for an account, in providing that information, you will get then login credentials from us to be able to log in to the Part 1 application. And those login credentials and instructions will be sent to the primary contact that was provided as information to get the account. And you will be at that point given a username and password to be able to log into the account, as well as instruction and a reminder about the deadline for the Part 1 application. You will use those credentials then to log into the application website. So the first part of the application, the Part 1 application, there will be different requirements for returning bidders and for new bidders. So returning bidders will see some of their previously submitted information. I'll go through that in a little more detail in a second. While new bidders will need to provide all information required by the Part 1 application. Now, the requirements of the Part 1 application are standard. So to start, there will be a request for contact information that will include contact information for a representative, an individual who represents the applicant in the auction with our main contact, but that representative can also designate nominees, that is, other individuals on the team that will receive electronic communications from the auction manager. So all electronic communications from us will go to the representative as well as to all the nominees that are designated. As well, in addition, in the contact information, you will be providing information for a legal representative in Ohio, and that is an individual or a company that will agree to accept service of process on behalf of the applicant. Now, for returning bidders, you will see the previously entered information in the Part 1 form, and you can then simply confirm that prior information if it's still correct or provide any necessary updates. For new bidders, you will have to provide all of the information that I just discussed for the contact information. As the second portion of the requirements for the Part 1 application, or the requirements to make sure that all the PJM requirements are fulfilled, namely that the applicant has a PJM account, and also that the applicant is qualified as a market buyer and seller. Again, for this item, returning bidders will see the information that was previously submitted in the Part 1 form and will be invited to confirm that information if it's still up to date, while new bidders will be able to provide information to satisfy this requirement. For the remainder of the requirement of the Part 1 application that I'll speak of right now, for all of those requirements, both new and returning bidder will be asked to provide that information. That includes some certification that will be to the applicant to agree to the terms of the MISA, or Master Energy Supply Agreement, as well as to the CBP rules, as well as other certifications such as certifying that the applicant agrees to keep information that's related to the auction confidential. All applicants, new and returning, will also be required to provide financial information, including annual and quarterly financial statements, credit ratings, to be able to, for AEP Ohio, to provide a credit worthiness assessment on that basis. There are some bidders in specific circumstances that would be asked for additional information that includes foreign applicants or applicants with foreign guarantors. Now, a reminder here that those documents, for example, the annual and the quarterly financial statements, can simply be uploaded through the application website so that we don't need you to provide or to send hard copies of those documents. Finally, this is not really a requirement because it's an optional process, but you may request modification to the pre-bid credit instruments, and that is done by submitting a red line of the applicable document and uploading that red line to the application website. Any modification to a credit instrument that's accepted for one bidder is made available to all bidders on an optional basis. And the document that has the acceptable modifications to the pre-bid credit instruments is posted to the website. So a reminder that as an online process, as was mentioned in the first part of the presentation, it's not just a two-part application, but each application is a two-step process, namely submitting information through the online form, after which we provide you with customized signature pages that you can print, complete, sign, upload, scan and upload, and provide to us through the application website. So the customized signature pages that you will receive as part of the Part 1 process include designation of the representative by the applicant, the legal representative, responsibilities for the representative, customized certification, and then you may provide a nomination form that is for designation of nominees. Other individuals on your team that will receive our electronic communications to you, as well as a Part 1 upload of creditworthiness only for applicants that are part of a bidding agreement and that have declared that bidding agreement in their Part 1 application. For some of these forms, as indicated on this slide, returning bidders may retain that information, retain that upload if, of course, the information remains up to date. Otherwise, they may update that information. For new bidders and for these other customized signature forms, all bidders submit those. And again, we will provide them to you. You can then fill them out, print them, sign, scan, and then upload them back to the signature page portion of the website. Once that process is completed, interested parties that are successful in that process become qualified bidders and are then invited to participate in the second part of the application process to become registered bidders. For the Part 2 application, all bidders, whether new or returning, submit to the same requirements, and those include submitting an indicative offer, submitting pre-bid security that will be in proportion to that indicative offer, making certifications that include certifications to comply with association rules and handling of confidential information, as well as additional certifications. So I'll go into a little bit more detail on some of these requirements, starting with the indicative offer. So the indicative offer is a maximum number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid, and that number of tranches is provided at two different price points. One is the minimum starting price, and the other one is the maximum starting price. The image you see here is the type of table that you will encounter in the Part 2 application. Now, the minimum starting price, maximum starting prices have not been announced yet, but once they are, they will then appear in the Part 2 form. And you can provide your indicative offer. Again, that's your intention, your maximum number of tranches that you'd be willing to bid as those two prices. The number of tranches in your indicative offer at the maximum starting price is important for a couple of reasons. One is that it determines the amount of pre-bid security you will have to provide. Namely, it's going to be $500,000 per tranche of the indicative offer at the maximum starting price in the form of cash or a pre-bid letter of credit, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. The second reason that the indicative offer at the maximum starting price is important is that it determines a bidder's initial eligibility, namely the number of tranches that the bidder is eligible to bid in round one of the auction. Now, the auction rules are constructed in such a way that a bid can never be increased. The number of tranches bid during the auction can never increase. So, in effect, the indicative offer at the maximum starting price determines the maximum number of tranches that a bidder can ever bid in the auction. So it's particularly important that that indicative offer really represents your maximum number of tranches that you would be willing to bid at that price. Now, bidders are subject to load caps in the auction, and those will constrain the number of tranches that you can put as your indicative offer, and there are two types of load caps. One is a load cap per auction, and a bidder cannot bid or win more than 80% of the tranches available or the tranche target at the start of the auction. And secondly, and this is low cap is across all the auction in the CBP, there is a credit-based tranche cap that's determined on the basis of the credit ratings. And it's determined in accordance to the table that is provided to you on this slide. So to go over the additional Part 2 requirements in addition to the indicative offer, we mentioned already that the number of tranches in the indicative offer at the maximum starting price determines the amount of pre-bid security required. So each qualified bidder in its Part 2 application must submit either a letter of credit or cash in an amount of $500,000 per tranche for its indicative offer at the maximum starting price. And that pre-bid letter of credit is really the only document that is provided in hard copy. And at the end of this presentation, we will provide the address at which you would need to send that pre-bid letter of credit. There's no additional pre-bid security in the auction. It's only letter of credit or cash for that $500,000 per tranche of the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. There are also, as we mentioned, certifications. Some are for compliance with the association and confidential information rules. To look at those rules specifically, you can refer to Section 8 of the CBP rules. So there's a number of certifications, such as certifying that as an applicant you are not associated with another qualified bidder, and all those certifications on the compliance with association rules are to promote the competitiveness of the auction. There's a number of certifications as well that are about the information related to the auction, in particular that you are going to undertake to keep that information confidential. There's going to be additional certifications as well, including agreeing that any bid in the auction means that there will be or there will arise a binding obligation under the terms of the MISA, and also agreeing not to assign your rights as a registered bidder should you successfully complete the Part 2 application. Again, it's a two-step process. It's online, so you start by filling the information in the Part 2 form, and then we will prepare for you a customized signature page. It's easier in Part 2 because there's just going to be one signature page with those customized certifications, depending on how you filled in the Part 2 application. New and returning bidders must provide that customized signature page, namely to fill that in, print it, sign it, scan it, and then upload it to the website. So that completes the overview of the application process. The next part of the presentation is to talk a little bit about bidding in the auction, both at a, what I would say, a theoretical level of how it proceeds, and then we will follow up with having some practicalities about how bids are submitted, and given that bids are submitted online, what kind of backup methods there are if you are having problems submitting bids through the online method. But first, generally speaking, it's a multiple round auction process, and each of these rounds will have three phases: the first phase in which bids are submitted, second phase in which results are calculated, and then a third phase in which information is reported back to bidders before they get to submit their next bids in the following round. So a bid here is a statement by a bidder of how many tranches they want to supply at the going price for the round. And the going price for the round is a price that is announced by the auction manager. For the first round of the auction, the price, so the round one price, is going to be announced to registered bidders only 3 days prior to the start of the auction. In the calculating phase, the auction manager tabulates the results of the round's bidding phase, that is, looks at the number of tranches that are bid and compares it to the number of tranches that are needed or the tranche target, and on the basis of the excess supply in the round, calculates the price for the next round. That price for the next round is part of the information that is provided to bidders in the reporting phase. The other information that's provided to bidders in the reporting phase is the range of excess supply, and we'll give an example of that in a second. So to be more precise about this, we'll think about the progression of the rounds in round one and then in round two, and all subsequent rounds are going to be basically the same as in round two. So in round one, again, a bid is always just a number of tranches that the bidder is willing to supply at the going price for the round. It's just going to be the round one price that's announced to registered bidders 3 days prior to the auction. There's a constraint on the number of tranches that can be bid, and that's the bidder's initial eligibility, and a reminder that that initial eligibility is determined by your indicative offer at the maximum starting price that you submit in the Part 2 application. And because the bidder is not able to increase the number of tranches bid throughout the auction, effectively, that's your maximum number of tranches that you can bid throughout the auction. Now, just a quick note that there's a possible reduction of the tranche target if there's insufficient supply to ensure competitive bidding, and that would be announced to bidders at the time. However, the criteria that could lead to such a reduction while it's determined prior to the auction is not announced to bidders. Once certain pre-specified criteria have been met, however, the discretion to reduce the tranche target is eliminated. So once the bids are in the round one, and once there is a calculation by the auction manager comparing the number of tranches bid to the number of tranches that are needed, that information then is provided back to bidder in the reporting phase, and the sample reports that you see here include then the round two price, so the price, the going price in the following round, as well as a range of excess supply here from 51 to 55. So that range of excess supply, first of all, includes the actual number of excess supply in the auction. And second, is going to always be a range where the upper bound of the range is going to be a number divisible by 5. The bidder, in addition to seeing this information, will also see the result of its own bid. However, no bidder has information about other bidders' bids, their identities, or their eligibility. Now, the price from one round to the next goes down as long as there is excess supply, and the amount by which the price goes down is called a decrement. And the decrement is related, positively related, to the amount of excess supply left in the auction, meaning the greater the amount of excess supply, the greater the decrement, so the greater is going to be the decrease in price from one round to the next. Now, there are formulas, tables that are used to determine the decrement, and those are provided to bidders. They will be provided to bidders in the bidder user manual that will be provided to registered bidders, as well as all the possible ranges of excess supply that will be used during the auction. So while there is a formula, while there are tables for the excess supply ranges, the auction manager during the auction always has the discretion to override the decrement to ensure an orderly close to the auction. So talking now a little bit about bidding in round two and all subsequent rounds, we talked about round one, we talked about the reports, the fact that prices go down from one round to the next. Once there is a reduction in price in round two, for example, a bidder then has a couple of choices. They can leave their bid unchanged, meaning they can bid the same number of tranches that they bid in the previous round, or they can reduce the number of tranches that they're willing to supply if the price goes down. If they reduce the number of tranches that they're willing to supply, we say that the bidder is withdrawing tranches from the auction. Now, there's always a constraint. So we said first round, you cannot bid more than your initial eligibility determined by the indicative offer at the maximum starting price, and you cannot increase the number of tranches bid. Another way to say the same thing is to say that a bidder cannot bid more than its eligibility. And in round two, the eligibility is the number of tranches that the bidder bid in round one. In round three, in all subsequent rounds, the eligibility is going to be the eligibility in the prior round less any tranches that were withdrawn. So when withdrawing tranches, so when reducing the number of tranches bid from one round to the next, a bidder must provide an exit price. An exit price is a final and best offer for those tranches that will no longer be bid. And once you withdraw tranches, you lose the eligibility that are associated with those tranches. In the example that we have here, the price in round one was $65 per megawatt hour. The price in round two went down $61.75, and the bidder went from being willing to supply three tranches to two, therefore withdrawing the difference between those two or withdrawing one tranche. So the bidder can make a final and best offer for that one tranche. The bidder was willing to bid it at $65, no longer willing to bid it at $61.75. So the final and best offer is going to be a price in between those two, strictly greater than $61.75 because the bidder is not willing to bid it there, but can go up to the prior round price of $65. So this process is going to continue. The auction is going to continue, go from one round to the next with a reduction in price as long as there is excess supply in the auction, namely there's more tranches bid then there are tranches available. When the auction does close, then there's going to be a uniform price that's going to be determined called the auction clearing price, and there's two cases for that. Either we go from a situation where there's too many tranches to there's exactly the right number of tranches, so the number of tranches bid is equal to the tranche target or the number of tranches available. In that case, the auction clearing price will simply be the price, the going price, in the final round. It's possible, however, that we go from a situation where there are more tranches bid than there are available and to a situation where there are fewer tranches bid than available. In that case, the auction clearing price is going to be the lowest exit price at which the tranche target is filled. We'll give an example of that in the next slide. So in this example, in round 11, at a price of $39.42, there are three bidders remaining in this auction, and there is an excess supply of two tranches. So 42 tranches bid for a target of 40 for an excess supply of two. The price goes down from $39.42 to $38.68. All bidders withdraw tranches, and we go from being over by two tranches to being under by three tranches. The way the tranche target is filled from here is simply by price order. So we start by taking all the tranches that were bid at the going price of $38.68, and then we take the next tranches in price order, which are two tranches withdrawn by bidder A at a price of $38.69. So that gives us 37 plus 2, 39 tranches. The tranche target is 40. We need one more tranche, so we're going to take the next one in price order from bidder B that was withdrawn at $38.99. And now we have just enough to fill the tranche target, and we take the lowest price at which that tranche target is filled as the auction clearing price, and that's $38.99. So that would be the auction clearing price in this example. Of course, after the auction is over, the auction results are subject to review from the commission. The commission has a 2-business-day window after the conclusion of the auction for the review of the results, although the commission typically reviews the results in a single day. There are specific criteria that the commission may use to reject the results of the auction, including if there is a specific CBP rule that has been violated. If it's not the case that the auction was oversubscribed, if it's not the case that there were four or more bidders, or if a bidder actually won more than 80% of the tranches available at the start of the auction. There are also, as part of the CBP rule, contingency plans for the case where either not all tranches are procured at the auction or there's a supplier default. Now, I'll talk about these contingency plan at a general level. So at a general level, when not all tranches are procured, the contingency plan was to rebid those tranches in the next auction. Of course, we are in the last auction of the CBP, so if it were to happen in this case, then AP Ohio would procure supply in PJM administered markets for any tranches that weren't filled. For supplier default, again, AP Ohio procures supply in PJM administered market until tranches can be rebid. That's kind of the general gist of the contingency plan that's in the CBP rules, and would continue supplying those tranches through purchases in PJM administered market if there's no ability to rebid those tranches. That's an overview of the auction, the bidding, the structure of the rounds, how the auction closes, and the post-bid process. Now, a little bit about the bidding method, so bidding at a more practical level. As I mentioned, bidders submit bids online using specialized auction software, and you will have a trial auction on November 13th, and that's your opportunity to practice not just the submission of bids online, but also the backup bid procedure. And the backup bid procedure is by phone. So if you have technical difficulty submitting your bids online, you can phone the auction manager office and reach a technical assistant. And either the technical assistant can resolve the problem with you, or the technical assistant can take a backup bid. And what that means is that the technical assistant will get your bid details from you and will enter the bid on your behalf through the specialized auction software. And what that means is that a bid is valid when the bid that's valid is the last bid that's submitted and verified by a bidder in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software. I said the bidder here, but that is also valid if it's the technical assistant that submits a bid on your behalf through the auction software because you have phoned to submit a backup bid. So when we say here, too, that it's the last bid submitted because during the bidding phase, you are able to submit bids multiple times. So you can submit a bid early on, and if you change your mind about what you want to bid, you can go back in and change your bid, and you can do that up to the close of the bidding phase. That being said, it is the bidder's responsibility to get a bid in on time, and there are various features of the auction software that will help you there. One is there is system time, and you should put your own time on that same system time to know when the rounds are happening. And there will also be a queue for you in terms of the time that's remaining in the phase. Now, you should make sure that all your systems are in place and you should practice in the trial auction to minimize the chances that you would have any technical difficulties during the auction day that would impair your ability to submit bids in the auction. If you are submitting a backup bid, it's your responsibility to provide a bid that's complete and consistent with the rules. So, for example, to have an exit price that's in the correct range. Also, given that you have to submit bids online and that it is specialized auction software, we want to remind you of the system requirements. Those are really minimal. That is, you will need a standard PC running either Windows 7 or later, or Mac OS 10.7. Of course, you need an internet connection, and we would suggest that you have both accessible to you on the day of the auction, access through your company's network, and if possible, access through a second ISP. Importantly, there are some web browsers that are supported by the auction software, including Internet Explorer 9 or later, as well as the most recent versions of Firefox and Safari. Please note that if you do use another browser, the auction software may not function properly, so you are we strongly suggest that you use one of those supported web browsers. Finally, as backup system, we also suggest that you consider having a backup laptop, backup connection, and potentially teams that have access to the confidential information to be able to bid in two different geographical locations so that if you have trouble in one, you can always submit bids by having members of your bidding team in the second geographical location submit those bids. In the closing section, we're just reminding you where to find information regarding the auction. The main source of information is our website, aepohiocbp.com. And on the homepage, you will have a navigation bar on the left where you can find the information as well as the calendar and the data room. And you will also see on the right-hand side key dates and announcements for the auction. So the information tab in particular will have the documents for this auction, including the CBP rules, standard contracts, which is the MISA, information on qualification, credit instruments, communication protocols, associated bidder rules, as well as a glossary of the key terms for the auction. In the data room, you have various data series that are updated monthly on the 20th of the month. That includes historical data that begins in June 2010. It includes hourly energy, buy rate zone for SSO customers and for CREFs. It is divided in various customer groups as well as providing aggregate data series. So there's hourly energy and there's also customer counts in the same categories. On the CBP website, you also have the possibility of asking us a question. So if after this webcast you find that you do have questions, you may click on the Contact Us link, and that will open up a web form through which you can submit your name, company name, email address, and then submit a question. Bidder questions are typically answered within 2 business days, and then the response, along with the questions, are posted as FAQs on the CBP website. You can also always contact us via email at ap-cbp@nira.com. I mentioned that we would be providing the address for delivery of the pre-bid letter of credit. It appears on this slide. It's also on our website. And as a reminder, it's the only document that has to be provided in hard copy through the application process. The rest of the documents, there are spaces for upload of those documents through the application website. And that concludes the second part of the presentation. And we will now stop for questions.
As a reminder, you may submit your question through the Q&A panel. We will now pause to look at the questions.
Good afternoon again. At this point, we're not seeing any questions, so I would like to thank everyone for participating in the webcast today, and we will be posting this webcast to the website. And if you do have questions afterwards, again, you can submit those questions through the Contact Us and the FAQ web form on the website. Thanks again, everybody.
Thank you again for joining us today. This concludes today's web conference, and you may now disconnect.